Listen in to the Community Connection Show with Alan Collier every Wednesday from midday to 2pm, where local community groups let you know what's happening right here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. cbf.com.au.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. And, of course, being the first Wednesday of the month, we've got our private eye, Peter, with us. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, I hope it's been a good month for you. And you were going to go away and have a bit of a look and see at some of the best decisions you've made as being a private detective.
Yeah, thanks for that. I can go back through a bit of history and a number of years and a number of cases. And I have to preface my comments by saying I've also made a significant amount of mistakes over the over the journey as well, and continue to make mistakes. I think as we've talked about before, it's just not like the TV and the movies. And trying to follow someone around, you know, Melbourne's not too bad of a city because it's, you know, it's a bit of a grid and things like that, but you can still miss a set of lights or maybe elect not to follow someone into an estate or whatever, and then you try to find them later and it doesn't always work out to plan.
Doesn't it?
No. So going back to your question then about best decisions, some of the work I do for corporate clients or perhaps lawyers, they might be having a bit of a look at someone to see perhaps whether they're as incapacitated as what they might be claiming.
Yep.
And one of the things I always try to do before I even jump in the car is do a little bit of homework on the person, even something as basic as checking that they may or may not still reside at the last known address.
Yep.
And you actually have a giggle about that, but you would be surprised the amount of times that that information hasn't been verified before.
Hasn't it?
Before they perhaps allocate a reasonable amount of hours to monitor a specific address without actually checking first that the person's still at that last known address.
So you could be sitting off in a car or whatever you've got to do, and we don't want to know how you go about it, but you could be sitting at a dud address.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you could be come back with a nil result, or it doesn't seem to make sense, or you're watching the wrong people purely based on the fact that no one's actually tried to verify that they're still in residence at that particular address. So, you know, obviously things like photos, names, you know, even who they may or may not be living with can be important. Vehicles, if they're known, are not always known. Rarely these days are vehicles known. So, yeah, it's just sort of basic things like that that sometimes people overlook. And I tend to run, particularly with those things, I run a certain course of inquiries, and you try to stick to what you know and confirm and deny everything, which is one of the things I always often say, is confirm and deny is important. You need to confirm what you can, deny what needs to be denied, and then somewhere in there you've got a good starting point and a good basis to continue on.
Peter, do you ever get any preferential treatment under the Privacy Act? Like, are you able to find look up a registration plate on a car and get the information any better than anyone else, or don't they let you have that?
Absolutely not. Oh. So, many moons ago, it might have been possible to have some registration details confirmed, but that should not happen now. And if it did happen, the person that released the information would get into a lot of trouble, and the person receiving the information or using it would also stand to get into trouble, but it's probably more the person releasing it. So, and I think there's been a couple of recent media cases where perhaps a well-known person has come to the attention of the press, and then, you know, the authorities have gone back and looked at and found that a number of people in a position to do so have actually then accessed that information, and they don't have any valid reason to have done that. So they can face some serious consequences, yeah.
So they're not going to give you any inside information, are they, the police in particular?
No. So realistically, the only power that we have is if I'm at a locate or if a private investigators at a location for a legitimate reason, and even, well, you need a license these days to even go and knock on a door to some respects, and that goes back to the, you know, the charity door knocking and the door knocking for marketing purposes, which should not really happen so much these days. So if I'm there for a legitimate reason, then I do have the, well, I don't think it's the authority, but I can't get into trouble for approaching a residence. If I'm doing a motor vehicle accident investigation, for argument's sake, and you approach the six nearest houses either side of the street to see if anyone saw or heard anything or witnessed anything, or that could be the case for theft or burglary as well. You might do that to supplement what the police may or may not have done already. So that if you're there for a legitimate reason, there's no issue. And I think we've already touched on the public place aspect about being out on the street, sitting in your vehicle, and that it is actually a public place. So even though it's a nuisance, and I appreciate that it is a nuisance or appears to be a nuisance, there's actually not a lot that can be done in respect to moving not only a private investigator, but really anyone on if they just happen to be there, other than if it becomes either stalking or harassment, and then obviously there's an issue. So,
Peter, if we'll just say an insurance company has said to you, we think Joe Bloggs is swinging the leg. We don't think he's anywhere near as bad as what he makes out. So are you then allowed to go and not, because you want to know whether you're sitting at the right house. So and what sort of response do you get if you go to sort of three or four houses each way and say, does Joe Bloggs live next door? Does that happen? And if so, what sort of response do you get from the public?
Yeah, look, I'll be perfectly honest with you, Alan. I haven't undertaken that kind of inquiry for a number of years.
Right.
And certainly that would have been the case in the past. But perhaps one of the reasons I haven't undertaken such an inquiry is I tend not to do so much of that work. So whether that still takes place or not, I can't give you an honest answer. Right. I suspect that if you've got a reasonably good pretext, if you need one, then I guess it's all fair in love and war. Mm-hmm. So you probably would or possibly would use such a ruse, I guess, if you want to call it that. But I think there's other, certainly with social media and other things these days, there's probably a lot easier way to actually confirm or deny the person that you're, that is at that residence, or the person that emerges from that residence is likely to be your person.
I see. Yep. Now, that makes sense, actually. That makes sense because I guess, and I was going to say, what about in, I know you do a few divorce, or not so much divorces, but checking up on people. You wouldn't want to knock on the next door neighbour and find out you're not, and say, as such and such got a bird there or something like that, and then find out it's his best mate and he goes straight in and tells him, do you?
Yeah, I think the risk too is that, you know, neighbours, well, pop, you know, sort of a bit decreasing, I suppose, but neighbours do get on generally with each other, or maybe don't get on with each other. So the chances of it leaking back to the person is probably a risk that you wouldn't be prepared to take. So
we're here talking to our private guest investigator, Peter. Peter, I've had a question. I think I'll preface this by saying, I said to you right from day one, most of us only get our impressions of the private detective, what we see on TV, you know, the flashy red car, the blonde and all sorts of things that go with it. But we've had a question now from a listener. Is a private investigator, first of all, does he have an automatic right to carry a gun? And secondly, an average private, I don't want to ask anything about yourself, we're talking about an average private investigator, would they, in the day, a normal week, would they carry a gun, or would they ever carry a gun or never carry a gun?
Yeah, look, that's an interesting question and a complete misconception, of course, and it's actually one of my FAQs, frequently asked questions, on my website. So no, private investigators do not carry guns. In fact, should not really be carrying any weapon whatsoever. If under the licensing body that also licensed private investigators, there are what would be termed armed guards, and they would be licensed to carry a weapon, but certainly not a private investigator.
So just to expand on that, So you'd never put yourself into those sorts of situations, would you, where that there was the opportunity that the opposition was going to have a gun?
Yeah, look, I have to be honest and say I have actually seen weapons in the course of my...
Have you?
Yeah, investigations over the years, very rarely, and obviously at that point realising that perhaps the person or perhaps someone near the person or related to the person is armed or looks like they might be armed. The next thing I would be doing is disappearing at a rapid rate of
speed. So would I.
No, better to get out of Dallas, I think, at that point.
So, Peter, you were going back, or you were going to talk about some stalking.
Yeah, so there's been some recent news coverage about, firstly, about the fact that, unfortunately, stalking crimes in Victoria are rising sharply. That was the headline that got put out there. And the follow-up or the information behind that was last year Victoria Police responded to more than 1,100 non-family violence stalking offences.
Non-family violence?
Yep, and that was an increase of 12%. Compared with the previous year. So what that has done then, Victoria Police have, they've got here 100 frontline police officers and detectives are undertaking a training program which is called SASH, which stands for Screening Assessment for Stalking and Harassment. And what that does is it gives them the ability to assess 16 risk factors, which hopefully will help them determine how... the likelihood of further escalation or violence against the victim. So I think that's a fantastic initiative. Yeah. Firstly, it's a shame that that perhaps the 12% increase in stalking offences has led to this being undertaken by Victoria Police. But hopefully, as I'm sure, unfortunately, some of your listeners perhaps who have been subject to stalking have experienced frustrations from time to time with getting things undertaken or getting restraining orders or intervention orders put in place or, in fact, actually being believed and considered in the first instance. So hopefully this kind of initiative will make it easier for police to have a better understanding. And I'm not saying they don't have a good understanding, but perhaps they can have a better understanding of assessing the risk down the track.
Peter, what sort of... Yep. No, I don't mean the mental capability of the person, but you're saying it's not... the ones that are not family violence. So the family violence would be where the husband or the wife has got the irrits against the other one and, you know, there's a breakup there. What sort of reason would other people stalk people, do you know?
Oh, look, it's probably, to the best of my understanding, it would always be relationship-based, relationship-based. And there is a stat here saying 94% of women were likely to be stalked by a male. So obviously, that I think we'd probably expect that to be the case.
Yep.
Whereas, interesting enough, if a male's being stalked, the ratio could be around about 50-50. So... but I think we all would expect when we think of stalking that it would be a male stalking a female.
Yep.
So I don't actually have a stat on that, but look, I would suspect that would safely be more than 80% of serious stalking cases.
And it may be, say, a work person who falls in love with someone and they don't want to know them or something like so that, would it, Peter, or...?
Yeah, look, I would suspect that the majority of them that there would have been some sort of intimate or perhaps leading up to intimate type relationship at some point.
I didn't mean to cut across you. Or only in one mind, like it wasn't a lead up, but one thought it was. Would that be a case?
Yeah, I think there'd be an element of those as well. But I would suspect the majority, or at least safely, you know, a fair majority would be some sort of former intimate relationship, but I could be wrong. You might have to give me some homework on that.
Yeah, could you do that?
I think find that out. Yeah,
Peter. There's a couple of things that have come out of that that I wouldn't mind if you could have a look at for us, Homer. First of all, that as to what happens there, and the other thing you're talking about non-family violence, the rise of 12%. Could you have a look for next time what sort of percent rise there is in the family violence one, or whether that's tapered off. Peter, I also should mention too, just before you come back and keep talking, that you are from Absolute Solutions. I mean, we need to acknowledge that, because you give up your time every month for us. So it is Peter at Absolute Solutions.
Yeah, just to clarify there, it's actually Absolute Facts at the moment.
I had it back to front. I had Absolute Facts written down. I thought, no, I made a mistake last time. It's Absolute Facts. Right, let's get it right. It's Absolute Facts, Peter from Absolute Facts. Sorry, Peter, I didn't mean to do that to you.
No, that's okay. Not that we're here for marketing purposes, but, I did read that during the COVID and the lockdowns and that sort of period, that family violence certainly was on the increase time.
It's been terrible.
Hopefully now that people are a little bit more mobile, then perhaps that has abated a little bit.
During COVID, they couldn't stalk because so I'm wondering, I am wondering whether it's taken off again since people can get out and about.
Yeah, look, that could be an element of that, and let's hope that the actual family violence itself has decreased now that people are a bit more active. But interestingly, I think we touched on this a while ago, and I did try to find some stats, and I kind of couldn't find them. There weren't any updated information other than a general comment that police were responding to, you know, significantly more domestic violence type situations. So
it's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Terrible.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And I have with me Peter from Absolute Facts. Absolute Facts, we're right. And we talk more things. Peter, we got a bit sidetracked. We were talking about some of the best decision. Then we got that inquiry about a gun. So can we go back to that, please, Peter?
Sure, we can, but I wouldn't be much of a private investigator if I couldn't tell you more about the Targa Florio. So,
yeah, go for it.
Today's route is from Inverloch to Healesville, although it doesn't actually tell me what time they're
just hang on. Just keep talking, Peter. We'll be back in a minute.
And so day three, it does finish at Healesville. I'm just having a bit of a scroll through as we go. And day four goes from Yarra Valley into Melbourne. I believe that they finish at the Grand Prix course in Melbourne. So that'll be anyone who's interested. It's actually targafloriooz.com. So targafloriooz.com is their website. And there's quite a bit of information on there. And they've also got a Facebook page as well. So
Peter, I just had to step out of the studio. Does it say what time it will be in Healesville and whereabouts in Healesville?
It doesn't actually appear to give me a time, no. But it is finishing at Healesville, but it doesn't actually predict the time. Perhaps it's, as you're saying, there's so many vehicles that they have to spread out the roll in and roll out time. So.
Well, they're coming in a minute apart.
Yeah. And there was I'm just having a look at their Facebook page. There's a significant number of vehicles there and some highlights, and you're right, they're all fairly old clunkers. Probably not clunkers. I think they've been lovingly...
They have. They're in great nick, Peter. We've actually got someone listening outside the studio. That's why I had to just shoot out, and they're on their way to go and see them.
Oh, brilliant, yes.
Anyway, so, let's get back to our best decisions, please, Peter.
Yes, well, there you go. Hopefully I've proven that I can find things out.
You certainly have.
So going back to decisions, so over the journey, there are times where you do get a sense that the target that you're watching might have a bit of an idea that you're around, and my course of action has always been to get out of there and not basically confirm to them that you are actually watching them. And then the reward can be, you know, as I call it, live to fight another day. And then perhaps you might resume your inquiries, you know, maybe a day or two or perhaps even a week later if you have the time frame to do that.
Do you ever give it away, Peter, like that case you think, oh, well, I've been corrupted now, I just don't think I can ever get back onto it? Or have you ever found that?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And it's what we call, the terminology for us is we call it burnt. So we've been burnt.
Yep.
And that can happen in if your client has perhaps used other private investigators in the past and doesn't necessarily tell you that they've done that, and then you get out there and probably do the same things that the previous private investigator done, then you can get a sense fairly quickly that the people are sort of red hot on you. So the moral of the story is that you usually leave it a couple of days, if not a week or so, if possible. Obviously go back in a different vehicle. Try not to remain stationary in the same spot that you got noticed last time, and then hopefully you can resume inquiries. And I have had some success after some frustrating starts to actually then get the answer that you're after for your client, even having experienced those difficulties. So, yeah, so that's sort of the good decision things. And good decisions, again, if you're following someone, and as I keep repeating, it's not like the TVs and the movies and it doesn't all run smoothly. You do quite often lose contact with the person that you're following. Obviously, what I'm alluding to is 99% of my following would be vehicle on vehicle. It's quite rare for me anyway to actually be following someone on foot. Other than if they go to a shopping centre or something like that, of course. So the joyous part can be is when you've messed up and you've lost the person and you sort of follow your gut instinct about where you think they might be going, or sort of follow a main road and either catch up with them or find them again. That can be quite satisfying because you don't have to ring your client and tell them that you've messed up.
Didn't quite go. Peter, do you ever find in a case where a client comes to you and they're not completely honest, they tell you that I want to know X or Y, and so you go off thinking you're doing that, but in fact then they start to ask you other questions that they haven't actually told you the truth of why they were following that person?
Yeah, absolutely, that's the case. Yeah. And, of course, one of the critical things to bear in mind, of course, is that if the person that someone's asking you to monitor someone, and I always become a little bit more suspicious if it's a male asking me to follow a female or monitor a female. One of the questions, and you could, to an extent you can only take their word for it, but you have to ask the question whether there's any restraining or intervention orders in place. Because the important thing to remember, by law, as I am their agent, I am actually subject to exactly the same restrictions. Absolutely, and rightly so, that whatever the terms of the restraining or intervention order that are in place as their agent, I am subject to exactly the same restrictions.
Peter, in that case, that would it be more the guy that would be the one that wouldn't be quite so honest because he's trying to check up on his ex-partner, or would it be the woman trying to chase up on the guy?
My experience is it's most definitely the male, and again, I think we've touched on this before. I am far more comfortable working for that sort of spouse or relationship type situations, far more comfortable working for the female, A, because they're never wrong, so I know I'm going to get the result, and B, that it's far less likely, in fact, I've never actually come across it where there's been intervention or restraining orders the other way, in other words, the male against the female. And I think you get a bit of a, if you've been in the game long enough, you get a bit of a sense when someone's probably not quite telling you the truth. And in my, after the years of experience I've got now, I would just decline to do that job.
Peter, so Joe Bloggs comes up to you, or it could be Alan, well, no, I don't want to put names in, so Joe Bloggs comes up to you and he says, righto, I think my wife is having me on, I think she's having an affair, so you say, oh, yeah, I'll take the case. So how do you, without giving away any of your secrets, how do you prove that I'm not lying to you, that in fact I've got a restraining order against me, so that, and then if you get caught doing it, so then would you be hauled before the courts even though you're a private investigator?
I've actually had that happen once, that I did undertake a surveillance job, and I monitored a female and got her to a home address, and unbeknownst to me, later that evening, my client turned up at that address and made a bit of a fool of himself. which led a police presumably then asked him how he came to determine where the lady was living, residing, and he obviously then mentioned that he'd used a private investigator to undertake inquiries or surveillance, basically, to establish the address. So needless to say, I got a phone call from the police asking, you know, what I'd done and why I'd done it and things like that. And at the end of the day, I could only assure them that I had asked the appropriate questions. I had asked whether there was a restraining or intervention, IVO as it's called, in place, to which my client had said no. And as it turned out, there were those such orders in place, and I'd breached them. But because I had covered my bases, I didn't finish up either going to court or suffering any repercussions that way. But I must clarify that occurred, safely more than 10 years ago.
It's way out of the place.
I'd like to think I wouldn't fall for the same trick again.
So you've really, the pressure is on you to make sure that doesn't happen again, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the last thing as a private investigator wants is to have, you know, a complaint lodged with the police, because that will only ever cause, you know, questions to be asked, and you always run the risk that you might actually lose your license.
I was just going to ask that, Peter. Not that I want to talk about you in that case, but if a private detective kept on doing that, like did that three or four times, there's every chance they could lose their license, is there?
Absolutely, and for me, that's my livelihood. So why would I jeopardise my livelihood for, you know, an extra couple of $100 here or there? You just wouldn't do it.
You just wouldn't do it. Peter, have you got anything else that we'd amongst the little bag of tricks that we've been talking about that you'd like to bring up?
No, look, I think particularly with the business about the the stalking. I mean. Yeah. If any of your listeners ever, you know, have a situation or a concern and would like to reach out and have a discussion, you know, they should be able to find me one way or the other by now, and I'm happy to talk. You know, like a lot of people, there's always things you can discuss, give them a few pointers, whether it's sort of counter-surveillance or how to actually document stalking so that you've got information that's going to be useful to police. So there's always, I'm always happy to take phone calls along those lines and offer some advice.
Peter, there's two things I wouldn't mind you looking at for next time, and that's the family violence, whether the percentage of the rise now has come back on stalking we're talking about, not just normal family violence, but more so the stalking, whether that's increased since people can get out on COVID. And the other thing, could you have a look at this stalking as to what age group is more likely to be? I'm guessing middle age, but I could, on the other hand, the younger group might be silly enough to do it. So I've got no idea. And I'd really like to, if you could have a look at that for us.
Yeah, sure. Some homework for me about the family violence and the stalking element, so the age, and I think your other question was whether stalking tends to be from arisen from an intimate relationship or perhaps not. So
yes, yep.
I'll have a look at that as well.
And maybe the other thing too, and maybe too early to see, I know you call it asset protection, I think, whether that's increased since COVID, since people are getting out more.
Yeah, you actually asked me about that, and I tried to touch it, but there's very little information being released, so I don't know whether that means it's a bad thing and they don't want to tell you. But we roughly loosely discussed that shrinkage should be somewhere around the 2-3% if possible. But I have not been able to find any more updated information, so I suspect that it probably is a little bit worse, and people may not want to declare that fact.
Declare. If you could just have a look at that for us, please, Peter.
I will.
Unfortunately, I've got to get going in a couple of minutes because Greg's on at 2 o'clock, so I've got to get out of the studio for him. But, look, I do appreciate you, Peter. We really love hearing from you. It's Peter from Absolute Facts, and you'll be back the first Wednesday of... Gee, it'll be May by then.
Yes, first Wednesday in May indeed. And thank you for your time.
No worries, Peter. Got to go. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Alan.